Live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
So on the international front, a lot has happened over the weekend. So the International Court of Justice has ruled that Israel's continued presence in the occupied Palestinian territory is unlawful and should come to an end as rapidly as possible. On the line with us is Aisha Kaji, and we've been speaking to Aisha for some time, trying to really get an understanding of what's going on there. Aisha Kaji is an international relations expert. Aisha, thanks again for making time for us. So, you know, this is obviously a separate pronouncement by ICJ to our own request by ICJ to make a few pronouncements. How important is this on the global front? Does this kind of give the sense that there is now more momentum on consensus globally on the fact that this is wrong? Occupied territories by Israel in the Palestinian region are wrong, and everybody should start seeing it that way.
Absolutely. I think, you know, several countries have come out with statements after this ruling by the ICJ. Yes, it is an advisory opinion, but it is the International Court of Justice, the highest legal body of the world, of the United Nations, coming out with a very, very clear message. You know, they have said almost unanimously, you know, by 15 votes to 1, that this is illegal settlement, it's illegal occupation. Increasing settlements on occupied land are illegal, and they have to stop. It has also stated very strongly that Israel does not have any sovereignty over the territory it is currently occupying under the 1967 borders. So, you know, the EU foreign minister came out strongly in a press conference yesterday in Brussels, where he said these settlements have to stop, Israel has to withdraw from the occupied territories, and the settlements have to be withdrawn as well. And he went on to say that, you know, you can interpret history however you want, basically referring to the Netanyahu government, but the European Union will respect international law. And he went on to say that the EU will have to discuss how it is going to take this opinion of the court inside, you know, the EU policymaking arena with respect to the Middle East.
Yeah.
And he also went on to say that, you know, Gaza currently is an enormous humanitarian catastrophe. It's a man-made one of unbearable dimensions. I'm quoting him directly. Mm. And he said that in order to rebuild Gaza, it's estimated that about 10 years of actually taking rubble out will be necessary. So it's very, very imperative now for Israel to move out, according to the EU. Australia has come out saying that it will respect international law. So too have countries such as Brazil, Bolivia, Egypt, etc. And, you know, you also have countries like Iceland saying very, very clearly that they will respect international law and they will also not be complicit in any violations of international law. Because that's the other interesting part of this ruling. It is basically saying that states who help Israel to maintain its occupation will also be possibly in the firing line, if you will, for whatever kind of measures other states decide to take against them.
Yeah, I mean, which is exactly quite a big point that you make, because third-party states themselves have to be quite aware of the fact that this implies that they too may be liable, and one can't help but think of the U.S., which obviously has been very supportive in supporting arms and so on, and, you know, in general has been supportive of Israel and not really wanting to allow itself to offend Israel. This has an implication even on them, if they want to be legal states in the global arena.
If they want to be seen not only as, you know, being one of the backers of international law, but the upholders of international law, then they're going to have to abide by this. And if they don't, then once again, you know, it will raise the question of different standards, inconsistency, indeed hypocrisy. And particularly for the U.S., but also for other countries that have exported either armaments or armed components to Israel to help it maintain this occupation, and also to help it conduct its ethnic cleansing in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, and its genocide in Gaza, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all of these countries could well be found to be complicit under international law, including the United Kingdom, Germany, India, mm-hmm. and others.
Mm-hmm. So, this is going to be interesting because Biden is meant to meet with Netanyahu this week. You know, we keep hearing that, no, we are almost very close. Israel is very close, very, very close to coming to some sort of a deal with Hamas. Do you believe that is actually true?
I believe that that is totally untrue. I believe that this Netanyahu government will do anything to avoid a ceasefire, let alone a cessation of the actual its actual attacks on Gaza. I refuse to call this a war because really it's not a two-sided war on an equal playing field or even a partially equal playing field. So, yes, I believe that Israel will do anything. This particular Israeli administration, given its right-wing composition, given Mr. Netanyahu's refusal to consider any ceasefire, any cessation of the violence against Palestinians, both in Gaza and in the West Bank, I don't think we're going to see any kind of a deal in the near future because that's not what Israel wants. Quite clearly, it is not what this current Israeli regime wants. Also, very interestingly, developments in the United States at the moment make it more and more possible, probable, that we will see a Trump presidency once again. And just for your listeners, edification, Mr. Trump's running mate is not only an isolationist, but he's also the CEO of Palantir, a surveillance and tech company, AI tech company, that has very, very... Mr. Vance was introduced, or rather, smoothed over the relationship between him and Mr. Trump, which was initially thorny, was smoothed over by Peter Thiel, who is the CEO of Palantir, this artificial intelligence and tech surveillance company, which has strong ties not only with Israel, but with dictatorships and dictatorial regimes throughout the world, and they have been essentially battle testing their armaments in Gaza and the West Bank. So I think with a possible Trump presidency on the cards, and with Mr. Vance as his running mate, we're going to see increased support from the U.S. to Israel if Mr. Trump does win.
Let's talk about the U.S. then. Obviously, we saw over the weekend that Biden says he's no longer going to be in the running for a second term. He's been in jail for some time. And, there are obviously questions about who then steps in. Is Kamala Harris the kind of candidate that the Democrats are going to need at this point? Will it not be too little too late?
Definitely too little too late. I don't see Kamala Harris winning endorsement from the sort of broad church of among the Democrats in the U.S., if they can even be called a broad church. But certainly, I think there is going to be a split within, Democratic support. She's one contender. There are other names in the ring, but none of them is emerging at this point as a real front runner. And say, I've said it before, and I'm say it again, there has been poor succession planning in the Democratic Party, and it's going to cost them in this next election.
Why has she been so under the radar? Tactically, this didn't make sense. Or what do you think they were playing at here?
I've been grappling with this. I'm not an expert on U.S. politics. I look at the domestic polity more in implications for the international arena. But my sense is that the Biden administration, despite having a female vice president, has still been a fairly patriarchal administration.
Mm-hmm.
And that Ms. Harris has not been seen in many quarters as having sufficient weight or heft, if you will, to deal with thorny political issues. You know, one would have expected to see a vice president really come to the fore, for example, on serious and key international issues or on key domestic issues. And we've seen Ms. Harris do neither, let alone both. So for her to kind of step in as a potential successor at this point, while she's being endorsed by Mr. Biden, it's too late. I really, really think it's too late to present her to the mass of the electorate, the majority of the electorate, as a credible contender for the presidency. I hate having to say that as a woman myself, as a person of color myself, but, you know, it is what it is, Pamela. And I don't see her making sufficient strides in 3 months to really, really conquer the hearts and minds of the so-called American left, because I'm very unsure that the Democratic the electorate that votes for the Democrats is really a left in the U.S. Left of Mr. Trump.
But,
you know, where's the center? That would be my big question.
Absolutely. This is someone who's been at the helm as a VP for some time, but actually when you listen to commentary about her, we only hear about her time as an attorney general, which was actually a while ago. So when you look at a track record as a vice president, nothing stands out. Absolutely nothing stands out. And it is difficult to watch almost. I mean, I think we're all watching in horror. She is going to accept. In fact, she has already done that. And I don't think any of us think she can actually beat Trump. I mean, unfortunately.
You know, while I have literally zero zeal for a Trump presidency, just in terms of real politics, in terms of what the American electorate seems to be wanting, what it seems to be asking for, I don't think Ms. Harris can deliver it at this stage. And I do think that Mr. Trump is making a credible case for delivering it, even if he won't actually deliver it.
So
I don't know if that makes sense.
I fully hear what you
rhetoric,
say.
His self-marketing is
no,
so
he's brilliant.
Good.
We don't have to like it, but he's definitely
Absolutely.
Got the charisma.
His showmanship, his performative sense when that shot came into his ear. Really,
no,
you know,
he's brilliant.
The man's making himself an icon for certain elements in the American electorate who will rally around him, and I think it's very likely we're going to see him win.
Is this not a lost opportunity? And the Democrats have really lost it here, because this is the one time where in this era, they had a lot going for them publicly. The public, young people on the ground who are on their side, young people on the ground, issues of abortion and things like that. So someone like Kamala Harris, had she played her cards right, this was probably going to be the perfect time to beat Trump. But they failed. They failed at everything because, you know, the timing in a way globally was right for them to take.
Absolutely. It's very similar in some senses to how the timing was right for Obama to come in as the first black president. Mm. The timing is certainly right for an American female president.
Yep.
But he just has not grasped that. The opportunity, as you say, taken, you know, she hasn't leveraged the vice presidency. Whether that has been by choice or whether that has been because, Mr. Biden is an old man, a patriarch, an old-style politician, if you will. But all of that could have been leveraged to her advantage.
So this
And she failed to do it. So in terms of just pure politicking, you know, which, again, it's an arena I hate. I hate that this sort of this kind of politicking. Mm. But, if you are in politics, if you are a politician and you are seeking the highest levels of power, then you got to do what it takes.
So unfortunately, we may be headed to a bit of an internal fight within the Democratic...
I think it will resolve very quickly. There'll be one or two contenders who will come out. I think it's unlikely Kamala will make the cut in terms of the actual nomination.
Mm.
And even if she does, she is not widely seen.
Mm.
This is not my opinion. It's not Aisha saying she's not.
They had an internal poll and it didn't look good.
I was about to say that.
Yeah.
So, among the Democrats, among sort of, key Democrat voting states and caucuses, etc., she's not seen as presidential material. And that in itself is a missed opportunity. Because one assumes that if you have the vice presidency, that you're taking aim at the presidency itself, and that you will use the vice president. And that she has not done.
Whoever comes in at this stage is probably still going to be too late. If we put aside Kamala Harris, I mean, I don't know if there is a character who is going to come out, 3 months to go and still rise up to the occasion and be as charismatic, take up the stage. And unless we're missing something here.
Yeah, well, I would say that perhaps if there was a young Kennedy on the horizon, the Democrats might have a shot. But really, there is no young Kennedy that I can see. Again, I'm not an expert on internal politics. I may well be proven wrong. It would be interesting to see somebody write that. But I don't have a clue. I mean, the other names that have been bandied around have frankly been kind of,
And the difficulty here is, as you said, this is politics. Even if somebody emerges that maybe the public likes, this is someone who's going to have to get the backing of those big pockets. And sometimes, American politics, in fact, everywhere around the world, is complex like that. So if you're not in the inner circle, we may like you as the public, but you haven't done the groundwork and you don't have financial support, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, it's you need the combination of both, and particularly in this era of this particular war in Palestine and the genocide in Gaza, the sort of occupation of Palestine, the genocide in Gaza. A lot of the political money in the U.S.
comes from Israel.
From Zionists.
Mm.
It comes from Zionists.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I think it's very unlikely that someone with an anti-Zionist bent at this juncture could raise sufficient financial capital to successfully run for president. Unlikely. Or successfully gain the Democratic nomination, let alone run for president. And specifically run for president against Mr. Trump, who has a great deal of personal wealth, who has done this before, who... like him or hate him, and I probably fall in the latter camp at a personal level, he has the political savvy and the political financing and the political backing to do this despite, the numerous court cases against him, one of which was in some senses resolved last week. I think we're going to be in for a very rough ride in terms of geopolitics globally with another Trump president.
Well, in fact, Aisha, to your point about the Democrats themselves not being quite left, I mean, yes, they are leftish, but not quite left.
Yes.
Whoever it is anyway, even if you want to condemn Israel, you saw it all, the other presidents. Biden couldn't condemn Israel. Obama could not condemn Israel. So it's a very tight rope. Even if you probably know this is wrong, you're going to have to be very careful about how you say it.
How you go about it and how you... You
don't alienate the money.
The mode of support. I don't think American support for Israel will cease.
Yeah.
But in view of international law, international humanitarian law, and the rulings and advisories by the ICJ, the ongoing cases at the ICC, etc., You know, this is an era in which that support for Israel, which will be sustained and maintained, I know it will be, but it's going to need to take different forms to the way it has been expressed in the past. If the U.S. wants to maintain its self-reflected image of being a champion of international law and its self-reflected image of being a leader of the so-called free world, etc.
Aisha Kaji, always lovely talking to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Tamela. Have a good evening.
Thank you. She's an international relations expert. And that brings us to the end of the show. We'll be back tomorrow at 8.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.